Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So James Harden has been watching The Last Dance. And which stands to reason, I'm guessing most current NBA stars are watching The Last Dance. He did an interview with CNBC on Wednesday. I guess Body Armor is getting ready to do a big campaign.
Body Armor, the sports drink that Kobe Bryant had been an original investor in. His $6 million investment is now worth $200 million.
Yeah, Kobe's kids will not be wanting for anything. His basketball career did a nice job of that as well, but nice when you can take $6 million and turn it into $200 million like Kobe did. James Harden is part of the Body Armor family as well. He's been speaking for Body Armor for some time now, and he did an interview. He was asked on CNBC about watching The Last Dance. I couldn't find the audio anywhere online, so I will read it. He said, I just can't. This was interesting, Seth, because he talked about the way he's consuming it. This was not just a generic answer like, yeah, I'm watching it. I'm really enjoying it. James Harden said, quote, I just can't watch it to watch it. I want to see the ins and outs and everything because at the end of the day, I'm a competitor and I want to see what those dudes were going through. All right. So I don't know. I'm not going to say James Harden is the polar opposite of Michael Jordan. Overall, like, I think James Harden works hard. I think James Harden is obviously, he's a great basketball player. But in terms of personality, like, if this is James Harden watching The Last Dance, because what's the overriding message of The Last Dance? It's that Michael Jordan was really like basketball's version of a dictator almost. Like, he was a maniac who liked to bully some of his teammates around, wouldn't accept anything less. Then certainly the baseline was what he was doing,
right?
And maybe even held his teammates to a really high standard. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
And if James Harden, like, I see that quote and I go, okay, is James Harden watching this thing, trying to look at things Jordan is doing and maybe adjust his quote unquote leadership style?
I don't think Harden would ever watch this and think I'm going to act like Michael Jordan,
right?
Which is interesting because there are at least some athletes on some teams who will think that.
No doubt.
There's going to be guys that think, like, I got to be the Jordan on this team, and it's going to be hilarious.
So in some ways,
your teammates are going to despise him.
You're paying a compliment to Harden. Yeah, you're saying that.
Harden knows, like, you've got to be a certain type of personality to pull that off. But if he could take anything from it, he might think back to, okay, how did I deal with conflict with Dwight Howard? How did I deal with conflict with Chris Paul? Because with Harden and Howard especially, you know, all the stories that emerged afterwards were that they were cordially non-cordial.
Right.
That they were just, it was almost like they didn't see eye to eye, but everything just kind of brewed underneath and was never confronted. Sometimes the best thing you can have is a knockdown, drag-out argument, or several of them, as long as people are in the right place and they don't get all petty and vindictive and stupid afterwards.
Yeah.
Then sometimes that's best to air the grievances. And he didn't do that. Now with Chris Paul and James Harden, more stories afterwards, after the fact. Like, these guys didn't see eye to eye. You know, Chris Paul definitely sees himself as like a Jordan type, but we didn't see it here. You know, when he sees himself as a Jordan type of leader, you know, where he's not going to accept anything but the very best. So I don't know. Maybe Harden takes from that, okay, sometimes maybe it's better to be blunt. Sometimes it's better to be direct. I'm not going to be like Jordan, but maybe I'll be more forthcoming with my opinion.
Which, in retrospect, which breakup is more surprising to you? The Dwight Howard-James Harden breakup or the Chris Paul and James Harden breakup?
I think the Chris Paul-James Harden breakup, just because I thought that those two would have been able to figure it out. You know, I thought that those two would have been, because they can kind of operate at a higher level. I look at both those guys, they see the game a different way, with a high basketball IQ. Whereas Dwight, I don't think anybody ever accuses Dwight of seeing the game with a high basketball IQ,
right,
the same way Chris Paul does. And, You know, with Dwight, it was as simple as, okay, I guess Dwight wants his touches down low so he can pretend to be the guy that Shaq wants him to be for a while. Versus, you know, with Chris Paul, in terms of just arguments about pace and ball distribution and everything, I thought that they would be more on the same page.
I thought they'd be more on the same page in large part because I feel like Chris Paul was more handpicked by James Harden than Dwight Howard was. I feel, you know, James was still only in his second year with the team when they brought Dwight in. And granted, that was still a move at the time that you wouldn't have argued against.
Yeah.
You know, that was a move at the time. Like, if the Rockets could go back and do it all over again, would they make the Dwight Howard move? I think they would, and they might do some things to try to manage those relationships a little bit better. And maybe James would do some different things because Dwight still had gas in the tank when he got here. By the time it got to 2016, he was not the same Dwight. He was still fine. He's still in the league now playing. But I think Chris Paul, for me, more surprising because he felt more like James's guy. Like, he had the he had the James Harden stamp of approval coming in. I think people who still have sort of a lazy view of James Harden would say Dwight, because I think James, in the lazy view of the world, I still think there's people that think James doesn't care about basketball enough. You know, that he's more into the off-the-court stuff, that the way he carries himself, he doesn't carry himself like a maniac, and that personality, which I think is more just James's overall social style than it is an indication of how much he cares about. I think he cares greatly about basketball. I think he works like crazy during the offseason. But if you have that image of James Harden, then you're going to be like, well, I think that guy would actually blend in pretty decently with Dwight because maybe they operate on the same plane in terms of the importance of basketball, whereas Chris Paul is a card-carrying mania. Like, Chris Paul, mentality-wise, is probably a lot closer to Michael Jordan than anybody that James Harden's ever played with.
Right.
In terms of that sort of overbearing leadership style.
Yeah. So I don't think that Harden's going to try to be that guy.
Yeah.
And the other thing about Harden trying to be that guy is that, okay, Jordan won a Defensive Player of the Year. James Harden, never going to win a Defensive Player of the
Year.
Probably
not.
And, you know, you can point to how he's a good post defender and that he's made strides. And, yes, the low light reels aren't the same as how he plays all the time. But, you know, who was it? Who was it that came out? Was it Beverly that said something about when Harden tries to tell guys to play harder on defense?
Maybe. Beverly would say.
Somebody dropped a little nugget. Text in 735-724-610. I can't remember who it was, but talked about just how, yeah, there's certain things that Jordan can demand of his teammates that Harden can't demand of his teammates.
That is one thing Jordan said in the documentary. You're like, well, yeah, that's true. Like, I didn't ask anything. I didn't ask them to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
Yeah.
The problem is, like, you can do so many things they can't do. Like, some of the stuff you may be asking them to do, they're physically not able to do. The one other quote Harden had from the interview on CNBC is he wants the coronavirus to be, quote, calmed down all the way to a minimum, unquote, before they come back.
I guess that could be read a 400 different ways.
Yeah.
Like, calm down to a minimum. I don't know exactly what that means. I know that he and several other players have very much said we'd like to be playing in a bubble, except we don't.
Except we'd like to go out at night.
Yeah, who was the other guy in this article who said that, like, yeah, you know, I want to go play in the bubble, but I also don't want to be restricted to the bubble.
Yeah.
And I don't think you understand the purpose of this bubble.
Right.
You already have that.
Yeah.
When you have a bubble when you go to your normal NBA facility,
yes.
And then when you leave, you go do what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what how lax of a bubble or how perforated of a membrane this bubble's going
to
have.
This was the quote. I want it to be safe. This is James Harden. I want it to be entertaining for the fans and players to get out there and compete. As soon as we can get this ramped up, I'm ready to go. I feel like the majority of the players feel the same way. That's accurate. I mean, I think the NBA players have been very, very clear. They want to get back on the floor. 713-572-4610 is the number to text in. We were talking earlier about the Tom Brady documentary, the 9-part documentary that ESPN is going to be coming out with next year in 2021, and asking what's the bar for the level of athlete that you'd want to see? Not just a one episode 30 for 30, but we're talking weeks of footage like the Michael Jordan documentary. Brady's clearly on that level. People texting in 713-572-4610. Mike Tyson's getting a lot of love on here. I bet we see that at some point.
Tyson, Tyson would be an interesting one if they go. Look, Tyson's got criminal allegations on his record.
Bad criminal allegations. Yao Ming.
The Kobe one, too, by the way. If they do a Kobe one that's, if it's indoor, that'd be, boy. If they do a Kobe one and it's basically with the approval of his family, then
we won't get that.
You're gonna
get a very, very.
You're gonna get people. There's gonna be a whole lot of stuff glossed over. Yeah.
Or they go all in trying to exonerate him. You know,
that's true.
I say exonerate. He was never charged with anything there, but I think and amazingly,
a settlement was made,
and amazingly, Kobe Bryant. It really is remarkable that he became as revered as he became with that, even just the allegations that he had on his ticket. So that'll be interesting because there will be a Kobe documentary. How do they treat that? Mike Tyson, Yao Ming. I think Yao Ming would be one I think that would have some pretty broad appeal.
Yao Ming would be really cool just to see all of the stuff. If there's footage that we haven't seen from his younger days and from his experiences in China. Now, it's not like Yao Ming grew up in some remote village and was discovered by an American basketball scout.
Right.
You know, his parents were both great athletes, and he'd been identified from very early on. But that part of it, and then Yao Ming post-career, where he's become very much a dignitary and an important person in the Chinese government in some ways, and has to walk a fine line. That's, you know, Yao Ming has walked a fine line these past few months ever since the Daryl Morey comments.
Yeah.
Because he works for the government, basically.
Yeah.
As the head of their basketball association.
That's a whole different category of somebody who might have like some not direct editorial control, but whose presence is at least lurking in terms of how the story can be delivered and massaged is the Chinese government.
They'll be asking Yao to go over it. And by the way, we've got your family in a safe location,
right,
Yao.
Right.
You'll get them back as soon as you get a documentary that the government approves.
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, another one, though.
I don't know about 10 parts.
Olajuwon, too, I think what some people think is like, oh, he must have grown up in a tiny little village in Nigeria, and then just like in Airplane, the movie, some American discovered him. Like, no, he lived a middle-class existence. And Hakeem has always tried to set the record straight on this.
Yeah.
Whenever somebody tries to paint it as like, oh, he grew up impoverished in Africa. Like, no. My parents did all right. Just, you know, back off on that type of story. So it's not as much of an underdog story as you might like, but it's a super interesting one.
Is Conor McGregor on this list? I don't think he's on the 10. I don't think he's old enough to have a 10-part documentary about him quite yet. But I would be intrigued by the UFC version of A Football Life about Conor McGregor.
They did one.
Did they?
A pretty long documentary before one of his fights. I want to say it was several episodes long. He's so engaging and he's so interesting. And I would imagine if cameras have been following around a long time. Yeah, there's a lot to dig into there.
Diego Maradona. Mm. That would be a good one.
Yeah.
The Argentinian soccer legend who has had all kinds of off the field stuff in his time.
He's gained way more weight than you ever would have expected.
He has.
He looks almost like
a chunky little fella.
Yeah.
I've said all along that this is a place where I feel like the Texans could see their biggest uptick defensively, and I feel even better about it after last night. I'll tell you what it is next. Justin Reed was on Queued Up with Patty Smith last night. You can catch the interview on the archives, HoustonSports.org. Patty Smith, of course, of the Harris County Houston Sports Authority. Really good series of interviews she's done, and the archive is there. And she's had Alex Bregman and Roger Clemens and Jeff Bagwell and all kinds of people. Next week, Carl Lewis is going to be her interview subject next week. Last night, it was Justin Reed, and here's Justin Reed on what it was like playing with a bum shoulder in 2019.
It definitely wasn't easy. There was a learning curve to it for sure. The first couple of games hurt the most just because I had to learn, and there's no other way to really practice and know what your limits are except by being thrown in the fire and kind of feeling it out. So the first couple of games, I was going down almost every game, sometimes twice a game, you know, and then I started learning what movements hurt and what movements didn't hurt. And I started having to adjust my play style to, well, maybe I can make this tackle this way and avoid putting my shoulder in a compromised position. Now, of course, the game of football is very fast. Sometimes when it's just like it's you, me, or a touchdown, there's no choice. But, you know what I mean? I got to put my body on the line in order to make this play. In those situations, I did that. But for the most part, I was able to adjust my play style to where it didn't hurt all the time, especially in the second half of the season.
All right, my two takeaways there, Seth, are that is one tough SOB to play with a shoulder injury all year like that. And I believe yesterday he tweeted out that he's got a clean bill of health now. So he's been rehabbing the shoulder, and I guess Justin Reed tweeted he's ready to go. My second thing about that, and I'm really curious your thoughts on this, he is playing a sport in a position in that sport where there are a ton of just high-speed collisions going on in split-second sort of bursts. And I guess at some point it just becomes muscle memory or just your body going into Darwin mode where it's just survival of the fittest and how to sort of navigate a play. But when I'm hearing him describe that and thinking about how fast things happen on an NFL field, where it sounds like he's making decisions on how to attack plays based on his shoulder, that's just something that's completely foreign to me.
I think part of it is, okay, there's two things. One is,
help me out.
Well, okay, as far as when you have a shoulder injury like that, and if you have a torn labrum or something, your shoulder is just naturally less stable. So a lot of times stuff that you wouldn't think would be harmful, just like reaching out for anything, ends up like he probably had times where he was at the grocery store and he went to reach for a box of cereal, and all of a sudden he was brought to his knees with crippling pain.
You've had shoulder injuries.
All of a sudden catch your shoulder in the wrong position, or God forbid you reach into the back seat for something.
Yeah.
Because then,
Your kid or something like that, right.
No, it's just like all of a sudden when your arm gets out away from your body, anything can happen. So that's while it's injured. You learn pretty quickly because it hurts so bad. And not to just reach out awkwardly at stuff. And it actually, it's one of the things that what I learned from having a shoulder injury like that, because I had chronic issues for 2 straight years, is you learn to use your legs to get you to places instead of your arms. Mm. And I think there's a lot of times it can make you a fundamentally better football player because you're not reaching. You're taking an extra step to get into position. And you really shouldn't ever have your arms too far away from your body, other than when you're breaking up a pass or something. So I think that maybe ultimately in the long run that helps him. And then two is that as long as he got it surgically reconstructed properly, now he's got extra time where he's not going to aggravate it doing something during 7-on-7s and what have you. I think if they got really aggressive with trying to fix his shoulder, then he should be fine.
So virtual workouts might actually be a good thing for him.
Yeah, if you're not a throwing athlete, they can get super aggressive with your shoulders. And I'm trying to remember, is it his left or his right shoulder? I'd say it's his left, isn't it?
I want to say it's this. I think he used his left to break up that pass that Whitney picked off, and I think the big talk was, wow, he's using his bum shoulder to break up that pass.
So if it's your left shoulder and he's right-handed, then you don't have to worry about throwing the ball to your kids in later on in life or anything. They can wrap that thing up like it's bound in fine
shoulders
Caribbean leather.
The opposite shoulder is practically disposable.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was the piece of the audio that I really liked because we're looking ahead to 2020, and it sounds like Justin Reed is ready to go in 2020.
Going and looking forward to this season, it's definitely a very exciting feeling. It just feels very different just internally, just the way that I approach it, the way that I see myself contributing to the team, to what I know I'll be able to do from what I did last year, not feeling 100% the whole year, really just struggling to just try and make it through the whole season so I can continue to help the team, to now to where it's like I don't even have to think about the injury. I can play in the very aggressive style that I like to play without having to think about hurting myself. I see myself making a big, big leap in my performance on the field and what I'll be able to do to help our team win.
That's what I've been saying this offseason. I liked hearing it come from the horse's mouth there.
You know the worst thing about those shoulder injuries?
What's that?
Is that they have these harnesses that they have you wear, and they don't do a damn thing. They're the worst.
The harnesses are?
Yeah, these harnesses. I don't know. Maybe medical technology's improved, but I have yet to meet somebody who's like, oh, yeah, that harness really kept me from re-injuring it. It just, all it does is,
what's it supposed to do?
It's supposed to keep your arm from moving places that it shouldn't go.
Okay.
But the problem is it, like, loosens up and everything. And then over the course of a game, you can move your arm places that it shouldn't go.
Right.
Somebody, one of our listeners said washing your hair when you have a shoulder injury. That's one of the things that'll happen.
Is that hard to do?
You wash your, if you got like a torn labrum, you'll go to wash your hair, your shoulder feels fine, then you catch it in the wrong moment, and all of a sudden you're on your knees in the shower.
Yeah.
And not in the fun way, just in like the writhing and agony way. Not that fun way either, but just like really genuine physical pain that you didn't want.
Yeah. Sounds like there's a lot going on in your shower.
The great thing is it all gets cleaned up immediately.
Right. No, it's beautiful. It's built in. Lamont tweeted us. We were talking about Mel Gibson and popping his shoulder in and out on the in the Lethal Weapon series of movies. He was kind enough to attach the GIF to his tweet of Mel Gibson popping it back into place after the South African bad guys dropped him in the ocean. That was a sad scene. That was when the girlfriend that he had found that he had fallen in love with within like a 12-hour period.
Yeah,
gave his Letterman jacket to they. She was South African.
Was she
herself.
South African?
Yeah, yeah. They drowned her to kind of get under Mel Gibson's skin.
You know, I never thought about the whole
to get
thing.
Under his skin. They drowned her to get under his skin. Boy, this is going to perturb me. I mean, to kill
well,
her.
And we know that's going to bother Mel Gibson because she's super white. She was like, you know, you're really getting rid of like the cream of Mel Gibson's crop.
Yes.
They're like, well, look at the. Do you see how white she was? That was the ideal. That was the epitome. And now
it's a character.
And that's
Seth.
What happened.
Name's Riggs.
That's why he became the person he did.
Gotcha.
That's why he said the various things.
He's living
he said.
His gimmick.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Go back and watch. You go back and watch that one, Lethal Weapon 2, where it's about him taking on the South Africans, and you realize, like, in the back of his mind, he was ready.
Yeah. What was that, 1990? Mm-hmm. Because he did it
apartheid.
Twice.
Apartheid. How about all right, Tide?
He did it twice in the movie. Once, he did it early in the movie, like showing off around the office. Mm-hmm. And then that was foreshadowing that he would need it later to escape a straitjacket when he was at the bottom of the ocean.
Like he was
Harry
Houdini or something.
Right. Yeah. So
Justin Reed is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
I think Eric Murray is going to start next to Justin Reed.
I do too.
And I think it's, what's my clue? They paid Eric Murray like a starter. And if they paid Eric Murray like a starter and they only tend to use him on special teams, then I'll be forced to go back into ranting about Bill O'Brien, the GM. I'm trying to be all about the football team in 2020 right now.
Yeah.
But you paid Eric Murray like a starting safety. I hope you're thinking of him as a starting safety.
The Texans have been, over the last 8 years or so, have been hit or miss when it comes to making significant investments at the safety position. I'll go back to DJ Swearinger as a second-round pick.
Uh-huh.
I will go back to Ed Reed in 2013 as well. I will go back to Raheem Moore, who was cut 7 games into his Texans career, or at least benched and made inactive 7 games into his Texans career.
Well, how about just or letting Glover Quinn go for Ed Reed?
Yeah, just overall
that was
bad
all
decisions.
A package deal.
Yeah. So this is going to have to fly in the face of what's happened at the safety position.
Well,
Daniel Manning, that was a good investment at the safety
Daniel
position.
Daniel Manning was a really good investment.
Tyrann Matthew for one season was a good investment at the safety position.
Mm-hmm. They could have used him better, but
yeah.
I feel like Anthony Weaver would have used him better.
I feel like he would have too, but we can't turn back the hands of time and live in the past, Seth. He's a Kansas City Chief now.
We should, if we wanted to be super trolls, if the Texans have an incredible season, they go 13-3, they've got like the second best offense in the league or something crazy, we should just be sure we give all the credit to Anthony Weaver.
There's a symbiotic relationship between the offense and the defense.
Look, I'm going to tell you something. One of the hardest things to do is be a defensive coordinator opposite of a prolific offense because what keeps happening?
Oh,
the other team keeps getting the ball back.
Keep getting the ball back.
And then we got to stop them again.
The offense just keeps handing the other team the ball. What do you mean? Yeah, after touchdowns, they kick off and they give it right back to them.
There is something to be said. The old Chiefs were a little bit like that, where the Chiefs had like these awesome offenses, but it was because they were either three or out or they were scoring a touchdown. And the defense would have to roll back out
That's
there.
Funny.
No matter what, like whether it was a touchdown, they would score touchdowns too quickly or they would go three and out. And the defenses would be exhausted.
That's funny. Mark Vandermeer is going to join us at the top of the hour. We'll do headlines in the next segment as well. Also, the owners are going to be voting on potential rule changes next week. We will tell you the big ones. We'll give you our thoughts on it next.
Patsy Kensit, the girlfriend in Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah.
She hasn't done much. Last thing I'm seeing is in 2007, The Magic Door.
She hasn't had a good run? Is that what you're saying?
She played the role of actor. Yeah.
What range?
Yeah.
That actually is pretty good range considering she's female.
This actually
and she would be actress.
No, but I think that's
she played a man.
Yeah, but I think they call them all actors now.
Do they?
I think so.
Okay. That's the PC thing to do.
Yeah. I don't know why exactly. Somebody explain that to me. But yeah, I guess cuz whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just she's an actor.
Okay. So that was her 15 minutes of fame was starring not even starring, but being in a role opposite Mel Gibson.
Yeah, I don't recognize any of these other movies she was in.
Okay.
She was in The Last Don, too.
Okay.
Mario Puzo's The Last Don.
Was she in Lady in White?
No, she wasn't in Lady in White. They didn't have the budget for that.
So the NFL owners are going to be voting on potential rule changes May 28th. That is, what, a week from yesterday? So next Thursday? We already know, Seth, they're getting rid of the horrible, horrible pass interference rule, or the review of pass interference that they had put in last year.
Yeah, they didn't even wait for this actual rules committee stuff.
They had
to get rid of that under dark of night, right?
Right.
They had to send that off to a doctor in Switzerland. This was like, okay, we're done.
A rule-ectomy.
Yes. Okay.
So they got rid of that. Here are the ones that I'm curious your thoughts on these. The first is, this is not one they're going to be voting on, but they're going to be recommending possibly a preseason experiment on creating a booth umpire and senior technology advisor.
I guess this is boob umpire.
No, that may come later, but we'll see. I guess this is the eye in the sky that they've been talking about.
Yeah, and the thing about this is, I almost feel like this is putting into writing something that rumors have it that this was already going on. That sometimes somebody might whisper in the referee's ear, "Hey, maybe think about this a little bit differently." Or, "Well, no. Whoa. That they've been getting an assist from people up in the booth or in their earphones on certain things and maybe how to administer stuff. That's Florio has contended this. I don't know how much evidence there. It makes sense, though. There's certain times during the season, Florio pointed this out, and I'll give him credit for it. As annoying as he is sometimes, he is a bright guy. There's times during the season where a referee, like, for no reason at all of a sudden will stop as he's about to announce something, talk into his microphone and everything, and then say something that looks like a different rule or a different violation than you thought it was going to be.
Has Florio put together a compilation of these things happening on a YouTube video?
We could request.
I think we should.
Something for
if he's, not that I'm here to stick up for the referees or anything, but I am. It's almost like your enemy's enemy is your friend. I am here to go against Florio.
Well, it gets super dicey, right? Because then you get into, wait a second, this is not transparent at all.
At all.
And you've got rules perhaps being changed by the booth, but nobody's using a challenge.
I want examples of referees with suspicious pauses before they announce infractions to the crowd.
I do feel like if there's going to be a booth official, because what it should do is take the officials who really are at an inherent disadvantage in calling a game compared to people watching on television.
Speed and vantage point.
We've got multiple angles that we can see. And those guys on the field really, they can't physically do as good a job on certain plays as we watching on television can. It's the same way as like when you're watching a game from the stands or using the film or anything and you're thinking, why could the quarterback not see this? You forget. Oh, yeah. Because there were five guys who were 6'7", 330 pounds standing in front of him at the time.
Yeah, you're standing in the middle of rush hour traffic is what you're doing as
it's
a player.
Yeah, there's a reason we have surveillance airplanes so to help the troops on the ground.
Right.
So likewise, so if you can make this work and it's all above board and there's nothing dodgy going on, yes, having somebody in the booth be able to tell the referee down on the field, like, hey, look,
this was bad.
That didn't happen the way you thought it happened or what have you, then it just opens up Pandora's box, doesn't it? When they mess it up, then all of a sudden, okay, why is this happening?
The problem with stuff like this, and this was the problem that I remember how staunch Rich Lord was about this pass interference thing being the cure-all for all of the ills of pass interference, that at least they're going to get it right. And I remember sitting and saying to him, We're only looking at the plays that it would potentially fix.
Yeah.
You're not looking at the potential plays that are going to create all sorts of negative conversation on Mondays after these games. Like, you're not looking at the unintended consequences of something like this. If you only look at this stuff for the things that it's going to directly fix, because those things are so egregious.
Yes.
That you're ignoring the rest of what could happen with all of the, to me, an eye in the sky is fraught with all sorts of just, you're injecting one more opinion that's going to be wrong a lot of the
time.
It's like if you're a
store manager and you have one egregious shoplifter once, like, walk out with a big screen or something. So what you decide to do is, like, have armed guards follow around all the customers all the time.
Right.
It's that detrimental. Like you'll stop the egregious error, but then you end up having all these other people just feel like everything's gotten ridiculous. And that's what you worry about with this. I guess it just comes down to, okay, the booth umpire and the senior technology advisor will have the ability to make officiating calls or communicate to the referee on what they see. It really becomes an all-encompassing God umpire, doesn't it? Like, it really does. Like, he can say, without an actual formal review, he can tell the official on the field, like, oh, this is a, don't, you want to pick up this flag. You want to pick up this flag.
And where does the buck stop?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like, who's the authority in that case?
Yeah.
Is the eye in the sky the authority, or is it still ultimately up to the referee on the field? In theory, in a case like that, if the eye in the sky is going down to a referee to say, hey, man, you really missed this, then that means in all likelihood the right call is probably coming from that guy. But if the buck still stops with the referee on the field, then, boy, does it become something between the referee on the field and the eye in the sky judge. If the authority resides with the sky judge, then do these referees feel like they've had their power usurped? Like, why am I even down here then?
Right.
Why don't you just officiate the game from up there?
I'll say, you know what I'd say to him? What's that? Here's a six-figure salary to help your feelings, big fella.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll get over it, all right?
That's
true. Oh, no.
Five-star hotels.
Yeah. So I wonder, the solution to this is simple, Sean, and it's a thought I had while I was watching The Last Dance. Maybe you've heard of it. It's a documentary about Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I watched that documentary. Loved it. You know what all the basketball scenes were in? They were in standard definition.
Mm.
I'm watching. Look, there's a lot less to complain about when you can't even see the basketball much of the time.
That's true.
I'm watching these.
What are those orange globules that are being thrown at that metal piece?
You know,
right there?
You know how easy it is to just get over what might have been a bad call when you can't see whether a guy's foot is in the end zone or not with certainty? This high definition is killing the enjoyment of sports. I want to go back to standard
definition. Okay, to ask you, it said this sounds like a request for standard definition.
Yeah, I want it to be one step above Tecmo Bowl, basically. Yeah. I want to have a bunch of vague shapes and forms and colors up on the screen letting me know what's going on.
Let's just go next level and go the whole way. You don't even care about concussions. Let's go back to leather helmets.
Yeah, that's right. You can't
when
even,
men were men.
You can't back. Let's go back to when concussions were a myth.
Right.
There were two myths. One, that tomatoes are poisonous, and two, that you could bruise your brain.
That was a myth, that tomatoes were poisonous?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, people thought they were poisonous. Some guy got up, because I do that. I want to say, do tomatoes contain like a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of arsenic or something?
I'm not sure.
Like, there's like some foods that contain a very, very tiny amount of arsenic. Mm. For whatever. There was a myth that tomatoes, so some guy stood up and ate a box of tomatoes once, and
that
was a
guy,
big deal. Back then, that guy's
a hero.
Yeah, back in the 1800s, that was riveting entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, like there was probably a three-part series in the newspaper about the guy that ate a box of tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
And lived to tell the tale. It's
like the sword swallower and the fire eater and the guy who ate the box of tomatoes.
Yeah.
That guy's a hero. We would not have the delicious Italian food we have without tomato sauce.
You know what I can guarantee? What? Is that guy owns stock in Big Tomato. That was a guy that went out, probably like bought 51% of Big Tomato. And then got up and just skyrocketed the price of tomatoes.
Like the dude in the Guinness Book of World Records that has like 30 cigarettes in his mouth at one time, and you find out he works for the tobacco company.
He's just like, he's fine.
Yeah, he's all
good. He lived months after that.
Right. Yeah. Ignore that his face looks like a catcher's mitt. It's all good. How about this one? I don't know about the eye in the sky, if that's going to get put in. This one I like. The onside kick, the rate of recovering.
Oh, give me some of this.
The rate of recovering onside kicks has plummeted over the last few years to where it's barely above 10%.
Because they changed the rules because they believe in that myth of concussions.
Right. This safety thing.
Chicanery.
Guys running into each other at high speeds are going to hurt themselves or something. It used to be, back before all the rule changes on onside kicks, the recovery rate was about 21%. Instead of an onside kick, you would be able to, late in games, you could, in place of a kickoff, you could have the ball placed at your own 25-yard line. So you just scored a touchdown. You're still down in the waning minutes of a game, so you need to get the ball back. You can opt to take a play from scrimmage from your own 25-yard line, and you essentially have to convert what amounts to a 4th-and-15.
Yeah.
And if you convert it, then you keep the football. If you don't, then the ball goes to wherever it would normally go to on that play. You know, they placed above you. You know, if you got 10 yards on the play, they would place it on the 35. If it was an incomplete pass, they'd place it on the 25. Seth, I'm all for anything that still keeps the result of the game hanging in the balance for as long as possible.
I think some people are getting a little too optimistic about this, injecting fireworks into it, because they'll cite the stats. The percentage of the times at 3rd and 15 or 4th and 15 is successful. And I think what you have to remember is, in a lot of those situations, those are desperation attempts by offenses at the end of football games, at the end of a half, where the defense is, where the defense doesn't care if you get a first down. So it's not going to be quite as... I see people saying, they're like, oh, it's like 30% of the time they're going to be converting these. No, because everybody knows it's coming.
25 is the number I saw on SportsCenter.
25%,
okay. 25% of, on 4th and... They didn't bring up 3rd and 15s, but that's, like, that's probably... 3rd and 15 is probably a better example, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah,
that's
because that's
like a do-or-die sort of down.
Or plus people know that it's coming. You know, like, whereas, like, that's more realistic where this is.
Yeah.
4th and 15, a lot of those are fake punts.
Yep.
Or they're at the end in a desperation mode.
You're heaving the ball.
If it, okay, it's 4th and 15, you're down by 10 with 20 seconds left. The opposing defense doesn't care if you get a first down.
Yeah, I bet the number's probably floating around out there somewhere in an article. But in general, you like this rule? I like this rule.
I like it. Yeah. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
I think it's, and I think now, because Pat Mahomes retweeted this, I think, does it give... I have a hard time. I can't say this with a straight face. Does this give too much of an advantage to teams that have really good offenses?
Or that have good quarterbacks?
Yes. If you have a really good offense, you should have advantages.
Yeah.
That's the way the world works.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. No, to that point, this would be, that would be, if you feel like Deshaun Watson is a guy who can go out there and convert 3rd and 15s, this is, or 4th and 15s, I guess, in this case, this is a rule that would seemingly, give at least a slight advantage to the Texans in these situations. The other things are more small rules. I don't know how much people care about them, but the competition committee is recommending expanding a defenseless player to protect returners if they haven't made their first move yet to ward off contact. And they're looking to also close that loophole that the Patriots and the Titans most notably used last year, where they just kept getting a bunch of dead ball fouls and drained the clock out at the end of games.
Yeah.
So they're looking to close up that loophole.
Yeah, so they'll... I'm surprised that wasn't used more.
You know what I would like to see them do?
Yeah.
Is I would like to see them in late in games. I would like to see them, if a team is trailing, say in the last 45 seconds of a game, and they run a play and the defense commits a penalty, I would like to see them put the time back on the clock for that play. I would like to see them not have burned, because what usually happens is they run a, you know, the offense runs up, it's 45 seconds left, they run a play. They run 10 or 11 seconds off the clock.
There's an interference or something, but then they... So when they need that time, if the defense commits a penalty...
I feel like the defense, when they commit that penalty, probably feels good that they just got 11 seconds off of the clock.
Depending on what the situation is.
Yeah, I think just maybe in the last 30 seconds or something.
Put time back on the clock.
Put the time back on... In the last 30 seconds of a game, if I'm the defense, I'm just trying to burn the clock out, and I'll clutch and grab and commit a penalty if it burns time off the clock.
Yeah. So I don't know. The only problem is, in the NFL, it's such a big... I shouldn't have used pass interference, because it's such a huge advantage to the offense.
I just think, like, in the last 30 seconds that they should put the time back on the clock.
Okay.
Yeah. That is grounded in years and years of saying, hey, they should put time back on the clock here. All right. Mark Vandermeer jumps in with us top of the hour. Let's do some headlines, Ben.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Hey, speaking of Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs CEO, that would be Lamar Hunt, I believe, or one of the Hunts. Is it Clark Hunt? Clark Hunt, the son of Lamar Hunt. He's the chairman and CEO.
Clark Hunt, it just feels like too close to the old joke of, like,
the Porky Show.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He provided an update on Thursday on where things stand with contract negotiations with Patrick Mahomes. Now, Mahomes, of the guys, Seth, who are up for contracts, the three quarterbacks who are up for big contract extensions this offseason: Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Dak Prescott.
Dak Prescott wants $45 million in the last year.
He does. Mahomes is the one who's gotten, ironically, the most accomplished of the three. Mahomes has gotten the least amount of play in terms of where they are. But they provided an update, Hunt did, that provided an update via the station's website. The negotiations are something we'll be getting into this summer. But what he has said, and what we've said, he being Mahomes, both sides He wants to be a Kansas City Chief for life. This is Hunt saying this. And that's our mentality as well. We want him to play his entire career in Kansas City. That's what we're going to be shooting for. Duh.
Yeah, there's nothing more annoying than Chiefs fans getting... I'll see Chiefs fans indignant when anybody talks about this contract. And they'll say, no, he said he wants to be a Chief for life.
Yeah, no
like,
bleep.
All that does is tell you he's not a moron. Right. Of course he's... Oh, yeah, you mean the team that he's trying to get a new contract from that he just won a Super Bowl with?
Right.
Yeah, of course he wants to be a Chief
for life.
He wants
to stay there.
It's
no
the
kidding.
Dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's not news. If he came out and said he doesn't want to be a Chief for life, that's news.
This is relevant to Texan fans, right, Seth? I mean, for the longest time this offseason, the talk of Mahomes has been, well, they'll just get to it when they get to it. There'd even been talk that Mahomes wasn't going to get a new contract this offseason because they're in salary cap hell in Kansas City right now. So this is newsworthy in that this is the first time the Chiefs are speaking publicly about a deal being imminent. So now all of a sudden, where's that game of chicken start to play? Before it was Deshaun in a staring contest with Dak Prescott. Now all of a sudden you're dropping the MVP and the Super Bowl MVP into the mix.
I think that, for one, we as fans of an AFC team want Mahomes to get paid ASAP because then it gets harder and harder for the Chiefs
and get paid a lot.
Because one of the things about the Chiefs is, look, oh my gosh, they've got just speed and weaponry all over the place. Yeah. You can't retain all that speed and weaponry after Mahomes gets paid. So it's going to level the playing field a little bit. Problem is that we as Texans fans are going to have the same issue because our quarterback is going to get paid big time, and it gets harder for the general manager, Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby, to fill in the holes behind it. I do think, that's what I'm watching, I would bet somewhere when Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien have been having their conversations in the backyard from an acceptable social distance, like Wilson and what's his name over the fence?
Oh, Home Improvement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Home Improvement. Tim Allen? Is that Tim Allen?
Tim Allen,
and Wilson?
Yeah.
I feel like they've probably floated it out there. Like, I wonder, you know, Deshaun's a good guy, and, you know, we could tell Deshaun lots and lots of stories about Tom Brady taking less money to field a competitive roster because, hey, at the end of the day, isn't it all about winning and stuff? And Jack, throw in some of the religious stuff, too. He seems to like that. And then we'll make it, you know, we'll put the guilt trip on him, and maybe they get Deshaun to either put off the contract for a year or make some concessions that Pat Mahomes might not make.
Not the first time you've brought this up as a possibility. I wonder if... Okay, let me just say this about the Texans. If Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs are starting to talk, that does create more urgency if I'm Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby and the Texans of getting a deal done with Deshaun Watson. Because Mahomes is going to get paid.
Mm.
And the last thing you need is Deshaun. I get it. Deshaun Watson is not as accomplished as Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes is the better quarterback right now. But we know how these things work. The better quarterback doesn't always... The better quarterback's not always the highest paid quarterback.
Right.
You know, and so if Patrick Mahomes signs...
Kirk Cousins is getting paid a whole lot more money than guys that are better than him.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So, so you know that if Mahomes signs a deal, that I'm guessing Deshaun's side digs in and says, well, whatever Mahomes just got, we want that plus $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Next headline. Speaking of former Texan quarterbacks, Ryan Fitzpatrick. He did an interview with ESPN, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, of course, playing for the Miami Dolphins, won some games at the end of the season last year for them. Fun to watch, as always, with Fitzy, but they drafted Tua Tagovailoa, so he knows which way the wind's blowing in Miami. The future is Tua's there, but Ryan Fitzpatrick, he wants to compete for that starting job.
I'm as competitive as they come, so I want to go out there and start. I know there's a lot of forces that go into it from all kinds of different sides, so... Whether that happens or not, who knows? But I know that in order for our team to be successful, whoever's playing in that quarterback room has to be successful. So whether that's me out there doing everything I can to put the team in a position to win, or whether that's somebody else, you know, be it Tua that is out there doing it, I'm going to do the best I can to help him to make sure that our position is doing the things to make our team win. And that's just kind of... That's my mentality. That's how I think about it. But you know me very well, I think, from last year. And you know I want to be out there competing on Sundays.
Is translation, Tua's going down.
Yeah.
He's going to wage psychological warfare.
Trust in Fitzy. Now, the best part about this Ryan Fitzpatrick interview was not that quote, although I'm a fan of Fitzy. Go find the video on ESPN. Go find this story because for someone who does a lot of crazy stuff with his hair, both scalp hair and facial hair, Fitzy is next level right now, man.
Yeah.
He has grown it out. He's basically got a pompadour right now.
He looks like the other notable Harvard grad, Ted Kaczynski. He looks a whole lot like the Unabomber.
Right, right.
Those are the
like
two
the
most
nicest cabin I've ever seen, though.
Pretty much the only two people I've ever even heard of that graduated from Harvard, Ted Kaczynski and Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, hopefully my daughter.
Well, your daughter will join
that.
She's going to be the first respectable Harvard grad.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's hope so. Yeah.
Not
so
like that. What's his name? That Matt Burke. He's wasted away. Huh, I wonder how you lost
big
all that
show
weight.
Off.
What were you doing, big fella?
Big
while you
show
were,
off.
Yeah.
Who are you rooting for, Fitzy or Tua, to start week one?
Fitzy? Are you kidding me? There's no guy. Fitzy's going to play until he's 49 years old because he's fun to watch or maddening to watch, but you're going to get one of those two things. He's gonna move the needle. He's either going to throw six touchdowns or he's going to throw six interceptions.
He does. Game to game, you don't know what you're going to get. The beautiful thing about Fitzy is over the aggregate, you know you're just getting 5 or 6 wins.
Yes!
Like you know you're going to be 5-11 or 6-10, but damn it, it's going to be exciting. Next headline, Nick Saban. Seth, you and I have said throughout the pandemic that maybe the strongest PSAs to encourage people to social distance or to you just adhere to safety precautions, masks, and so forth, especially in rural football-centric states come from the head football coach of the biggest college football programs in those states.
It feels like, I'm getting yelled at by my old high school football coach or something. Like, I better do it or else there's going to be hell to pay when my dad finds out.
Or in those states, they may as well be the actual governor of those states.
Yeah, that's
true. That too. Nick Saban actually did one that had a little bit of humor injected into it. We're going to play the audio. Know that when he is chastising Big Al, that is the elephant mascot.
So this could be a little bit confusing. It's Nick Saban and the athletic director at Alabama chastising the mascot.
Chastising the mascot, Big Al, the costumed mascot for the Crimson
Tide. Hey, Big Al, you need to be staying 6 feet away from me. And haven't I told you you have to wear a mask when you're in this building?
I mean, come on, Big Al. We're supposed to be practicing social distancing, which means we have to be 6 feet away from each other. Don't worry, Big Al. We've all been there before, buddy. Let's go get you a mask.
All of us want to make sure we play football this fall. And to make that happen, we must be sure we stay at home if we have symptoms, wash your hands often, follow all social distancing guidelines, and please wear a mask anytime you're around other people.
This is the only way I'm going to get my $9 million salary this year if we play football.
Why was...
Put your damn mask on.
Why is acting so hard? I'm not going to criticize him for this.
They were super stiff.
That was, you're playing yourself. Why is it so hard? I would be the same way. It seems like it should be so easy. That's why actors are the most underappreciated people in this great economy of ours. I'm sick of teachers getting all the credit and all the money.
And cops.
When actors,
and first responders.
Yeah, yeah. Living high on the hog while these struggling actors are just trying to make do. No, but Saban, like, he's just playing himself there. That was horrendous, right? And I would be the exact same way.
You would think that chastising somebody would be the easiest thing in Nick Saban's world, right?
It's so hard. Anytime I can speak into a camera as long as I'm just talking about football or something, you give me a line to read, and oh my gosh, I turn into Forrest Gump.
Let's compare and contrast. That was Nick Saban. Let's go to his rival in the SEC West, Coach Ed Orgeron.
The spread of the coronavirus is a serious matter.
Yes!
But there's a game plan for keeping residents as safe as possible as we face this challenge together. Cough or sneeze into your elbow like this. Wash your hands for a full 20 seconds. Avoid close contact with others. If you're sick, stay home. If you think you should be tested, phone your health provider first. Get the facts now at coronavirus.gov. Let's team up to protect our health.
You know what?
Go Tigers!
It's just there's something about when Ed Orgeron does it where it doesn't sound... You know what he doesn't sound like? Some hoity-toity public health official that's trying to tell me what's good for me.
Right.
It feels like none of this is any big deal the way Ed Orgeron sounds.
It feels like
telling me.
It feels like we're looking at it on a whiteboard before a game.
Yeah.
These are the keys to beating the coronavirus.
This is how we're going to win the
game. You must cough into your elbow like this. You must wear a mask when you're outside. And let's try to keep acceptable social distance.
We're probably going to get a ham sandwich or maybe some boudin or something.
Especially after we beat this coronavirus. Go Tigers.
I want to cough into my elbow right now.
I do too.
I'm ready to bust through like a bunch of cheerleaders holding up some paper banner, and I bust through it
with my coffin in my. Buried in my elbow.
In the video, is Ed Orgeron capable of coughing into his elbow? He's pretty barrel-chested.
He raises his elbow. I didn't look. It doesn't look like he gets his face very close because he has to keep talking.
Yeah.
Because there's still the rest of the message to deliver.
See, now he's not acting there, but I feel like he could act. We saw the audition tape that Les did. He's pretty good.
He's pretty good. Ed Orgeron was in The Blind Side.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
What was he on The Blind Side?
Was he the coach at Ole Miss? No, Houston Nutt was the coach at Ole Miss. Oh, no, maybe. God, was he? I can't remember.
Wait, well, he himself was or somebody playing him?
I may be wrong on that. Right. I may have, because I think, I'm trying to remember who, I think Houston Nutt was the head coach by the time, because Michael Orr went to Ole Miss.
Right.
And Ed Orgeron was the head coach at Ole Miss.
But they didn't have all those coaches play themselves in the movies.
No, they did. Lou Holtz came to the house. Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah, during that, but not like the actual...
Yeah, I don't know that, but I think it was Houston Nutt. You're right. Someone played Houston Nutt in the movie, I think.
I mean, those were just like little cameos.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Speaking of cameo.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of acting, okay, this is actually a very appropriate one because someone just texted the show. Sean, were you part of the college entry scandal at Harvard? I don't know that Harvard got mixed up in it, and if they did, I don't know that it was too deep. No, my daughter got in of her own accord. She's very bright, and she's a very fast runner, and she got in by herself. Plus, I don't have $500,000 burning a hole in my pocket that I could use, like Lori Loughlin and her husband, whose name I'm pulling up, Giannulli. I forget his first name. Massimo Giannulli, some fashion magnate, and Lori Loughlin, who played Aunt Becky on Full House.
Yeah.
They have been the parents involved in this college cheating scandal that have been dug in the not guilty column for the longest of times. They, Seth, are now accepting negotiated prison terms. Lori Loughlin, 2 months. Her husband, 5 months. Mm. And there's a lot of people that think like this is a really good strategic move by them because of the COVID. And everybody knows they're like, they're as guilty as sin.
Yeah.
Everybody feels like, or at least law officials feel like, because of the COVID, there's a decent chance they can serve this with ankle bracelets in their house.
At home, in their luxurious mansion.
Cushy lair.
Can they at least make a move into like a $500 a month apartment or something?
And televise
it. Can they feel like what a normal person under house arrest has to deal with?
I have been rooting.
Give me some house arrest. That would be so, if I could actually just. If I could say it in my own home, hell yeah, I'll take that. I'll
pay you. That's kind of what we were all doing for about a month or so.
Yeah.
I have been, let me just disclose here, I have been rooting so hard for Lori Loughlin and her husband to get sent down the river in this thing and get sent to jail for a long time. And here's why. They allegedly paid $500,000 to get their two daughters into Southern California. First of all, at least one of the daughters has a YouTube channel where she seemingly has no desire to go to college at all.
Yeah, she's already making at least six figures on her YouTube channel.
Yeah, and she jokes about like not going to class and stuff like that. So she doesn't even want to be there. This is clearly a prestige place so that these two can go around Hollywood saying our two daughters go to USC. Here's my issue with the two of them. If you're giving $500,000 to cheat your kids into USC, you can pay $500,000 to put your name on a building there and they'll let them in.
Yeah.
They're bad networkers. I have an issue with people who are not good at it. If you just network, you're Hollywood celebrities.
Yeah.
You played a role in an iconic cheesy 80s and 90s sitcom. You should be able to network your kids in and then still scratch out the check and make it the Lori Loughlin Memorial Day Spa or something like that.
I honestly don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's that simple, though. That's why they resorted to these measures. I bet you were at some cross-country meet with your daughter, and all of a sudden, like, the last place finisher on their team came straight out, like, smoking a cigarette, wearing, like, Gucci running shoes or something. She's wearing Yeezys for her running shoes and just no interest whatsoever in jogging. That was one of the scandals that didn't get uncovered.
That was my daughter doing
that? Yeah, because remember they were using sports to kind of shuttle them in.
Yeah.
It was like the last scholarship or the last special exemption that they were giving on the crew team.
It was one of her opponents doing it, not my daughter smoking a cigarette.
No, not your daughter. It was one of her... At Harvard. You said I didn't know if there was
a scandal at
Harvard.
I thought you meant in high school getting
into
Harvard.
No,
she had a teammate on there. You're right.
Harvard's admissions scandal was actually, I don't know about this whole one, but they got caught basically, or alleged to have, like, trying to suppress the numbers of Asian Americans that got in.
Right.
They had, like, there was a guy, Like one of the reviews of one of the guys was like, "Hey, this guy's okay. His mom's not a tiger mom." And people right. like, "What?"
Yeah.
The alumni advisor that was there.
That was a big deal last year.
They seem to there are a whole lot of questions about the way they were evaluating Asian applicants.
Yeah, didn't affect my daughter. She's as Irish as they come.
Mm-hmm.
Fair skin, red hair, and doesn't
it's
drink.
It's lucky she didn't try to, like, the dumbest move would have been if she's tried to get in by, like, claiming she was a minority. Like, I'm an Asian. Right. And it would have worked exactly the opposite.
That's right.
They would have kicked her out on her keister.
Ironically.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.